Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to First District Politics. I'm Bill Lichter, and tonight we are joined by Lisa Thompson from Convention of States, Southeast Wisconsin Region Captain. Lisa's the Captain of the Southeast Wisconsin Region. Welcome, Lisa.
Hey, Bill, how are you tonight?
I'm doing really good. How are you, Lisa?
Oh, just living the dream. Not sure whose it is, but it's a dream.
That's cool. Lisa, I want to let everybody know on the show that we just finished up one of your Convention of State meetings up in Cudahy, Wisconsin today. And at the meeting tonight, I came up, you know me, I've got all the good ideas with the great idea to have you on my Blog Talk show. And then if I can, talk you into my new version of the Zoom video version of the Blog Talk show. So I really appreciate you for coming on tonight. And hopefully we can get some information out there so people can learn about the Convention of States and just maybe take away a couple of the nuggets about that.
Well, as you know, the founders gave us a way to legislate without having Congress to interfere, and that's what Convention of States is all about.
Okay, can you repeat that?
Our founders gave us a way to legislate, propose amendments without Congress, the current Congress, interfering, and that's really what the Convention of States movement is all about.
That's cool. And, you know, one thing, Lisa, is every time I meet with you and some of your colleagues, to be honest, I learn something new every time. Tonight at the meeting, I learned some new stuff. Why don't you give the folks that are listening the overview that you gave to the new guy, Bob, at the meeting today?
Long and short, in Article 5 of the Constitution, the second part reads, it gives the non-legislative folks the opportunity to propose amendments without having the current Congress involved. What that takes and what we're trying to do here in Wisconsin is to get our state legislators, the senators and assemblymen, to pass an application for a convention of states. If 34 states pass that same application, we can call what's called a convention of states to propose amendments. Those amendments for this particular convention would involve three different areas. They would involve amendments that would impose fiscal restraint on the government, that would limit the power and scope of the government, and finally, it would limit the terms of Congress and its members. And that's really what we're trying
okay.
to do. Go ahead.
So just those three things, the Convention of States group, the website is conventionofstates.com, isn't it?
Correct. www.conventionofstates.com.
Right. And that website is very informative. I've looked at that and gone through the different pages. I recommend people to go to the conventionofstates.com website. Let me ask you this. So the three things, the fiscal restraints and limit on power and jurisdiction, and impose term limits, right?
Correct.
What do you mean by the fiscal restraints? Yeah.
Well, if you look at the way our Constitution and one of the drives behind this movement is, number one, educating the electorate.
Watch out! Cops are coming by.
And
there we go. It's real life.
One of the main
Blog Talk Radio, Lisa.
Well, I'm glad that was by your house and not my house. Anyway,
they didn't stop. They didn't stop. So we're always, you know, happy when they don't stop.
Back to the concept behind what we're trying to do here. The first goal of the Convention of States movement is to educate the electorate. It kind of
evolves
out of...
So the electorate meaning us, the people, right?
Right. You and I...
When you say the electorate, you're talking about... Right. Okay.
Correct. You, I, our children, our parents, everyone that is able to vote and help those folks make informed decisions. The second part of the movement is to help our government return back to what our founders wanted it to be. And I personally look at it as an overreaching, overbearing, overpowering entity that seems to be involved in every single part of our lives. And I'm not necessarily comfortable with that. And there's a lot of Americans that.
That's why you and I get along. Yeah, exactly. I totally agree with that. They can't help themselves. They just dream up new ways to get in our business.
And that is a true statement, and that's one of the reasons why I'm so passionate about this movement. There are many parts in my life that have been affected by some of the rules, some of the regulations, and some of the ideas passed down from Washington, D.C., and a lot of those things don't make sense in my life. So really, what makes sense to somebody in Arizona might not make sense to somebody here in Wisconsin, might not make sense to somebody in Virginia, but we all have to live by the same federal regulations that were put down by whatever law they passed at the time. And that's one of the things that this movement is looking to kind of put the kibosh on, for lack of a better term. Removing some of the power from the feds and putting it back in the state's hands. Getting to the three different parts that we can talk about amendments for, when we talk about imposal restraints and moving things back to the original Constitution, the founders put in the General Commerce Clause, which basically stated if something benefited all of the states as a whole, I'm sorry, the General Welfare Clause, if everything benefited all of the states as a whole, the federal government should contribute to it. Right now we see many, many examples of pet projects or they call it pork spending that may benefit one state or one group over another. Mm-hmm. But those people happen to have the ears of the folks in Washington, and that's how they get the money. That isn't necessarily what our founders intended. And imposing those fiscal restraints, this would be one way to correct, or at least put that on the path to correction, to make those line item spending budgetary decisions a little bit easier to cut out of the budget if the proper amendments were passed accordingly. Does that make sense?
It does.
And to me, you know, that's an important part. We obviously cannot rely on Washington to stop spending and to stop making the debt higher. We evidenced that with a vote a couple of months ago. So one of the ways to do that, again, is to approach it from the outside in using a convention of states. The second part of the second type of amendment that would be proposed is limiting the power and scope of government. And again, back to the Constitution, this would be the General Commerce Clause that I mentioned before. If something benefits all of the states as a whole, again, that should be part of federal purview. When we talk about that, I've had discussions with people about this, but if we talk about the interstate system, one of the reasons why the interstate system was put together was to move goods and services from state to state very easily, and that's where the federal money to maintain that system comes across to the state. The original General Commerce Clause was to talk about not taxing things from state to state, but that has evolved as we as a country have evolved. So putting some of the stop blocks on, again, regulations, rules that fall under that General Commerce Clause and making it make more sense that if something applies to just one state, again, that's covered under a state budget, not necessarily under the federal budget.
One of the things that I was reminded today in the meeting that we just left and came onto the Blog Talk Show, that I knew this, but the convention of states topics that you're talking about, they only apply to the federal government, right? We're not talking about these things applying to our, you know, to Madison, for example.
Correct. And that's great for the third the third item, term limits. You know, when we talk about term limits for our federal leaders, you know, we have some congressmen that have been there longer than most people work their regular jobs.
Right.
Those term limits.
All right, for example.
Yeah.
Just throwing it out there, saying 20 years as a congressman, 26 years in D.C., just throw it out there.
One of the frustrations that I hear regularly at these meetings is just that, you know, when they're there for that long, the idea of them working for us, the people, gets a little clouded with a lot of different issues. You know, special large donors, special interests, just party finances in general. And the more educated the voter, the more we're seeing how those items affect those long-term congressmen. And it's making a lot of us a little frustrated. and again, that those term limits won't necessarily apply here in Madison. They would apply on the federal level, which indeed would open, if you think about it, it would open those federal positions for people in the state or local level to move forward if that was the case.
Good point.
So knowing that they would be there for the 2 terms.
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword there. But that's a good point. That's a really good point. It goes to my question is, you know, we've lobbied, you know, you and I have actually gone to Madison, gone into the legislators' offices, the senators and the representatives, and given them the information about Convention of States. There's a lot of pushback. Why do you think there's so much pushback at the state level? We can only maybe find 2 to 3 people that are, you know, want to talk about this. We can talk about Senator Dave Craig, one of the greatest advocates for this cause. What's with the pushback, in your opinion?
I think a lot of it is misinformation. When the objections that are given are typically, I don't view an objection as a no or I'm not going to listen to you. I view it more as an education opportunity.
Right.
People think that we're changing the Constitution itself, which indeed an amendment does change the Constitution. However, amending the Constitution does not change the basic principle behind the Constitution, which is all men are created equal and we have our own rights and our own destinies that are given to us, as they say in the Constitution, from God. So those unalienable rights, I feel, are being infringed upon by the large government that we currently have. And if we don't make those changes, it's just going to steamroll right over you and I, because not everybody's paying attention to what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you could see me right now, Lisa, on our next Blog Talk show, we'll do the video version. I'm nodding in agreement with you. You know, you can see me right now just nodding. Yes, yes, yes. You're absolutely right. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, that's where educating the voters, educating the electorate is so important. A lot of people have not been taught exactly what our founders came from and why they did what they did to produce the country that they did. They came from a very oppressive government. They left everything they knew, came over to the New World, and created a different type of society. But the King of England still had his hands in the mix. And after a while, they realized that the king really had no idea what it was like to live here. He really had no idea what it was like to live in the day-to-day world that they lived in. And they said, you know, we're done. We're going to do our own thing here, and we're going to make it work. In all reality, that I liken that to what we're seeing in Washington, D.C. We've heard politicians say $1,000, that isn't anything. Well, I don't know about you, Bill, but to me, that's three car payments. That's car payments for me. That's, you know, my mortgage payment. Those crumbs are pretty darn large for somebody, you know, of our ilk versus somebody in Washington. All of the different opinions they have are formed there in the Beltway. I don't think they spend enough time back here with us. Most of them make 4 or 5 times what we make in a year. they kind of lose touch with their constituents. And this Convention of States movement takes a lot of the decision-making that happens in Washington right now and brings it back to the state level. And when I say the state level, those are the representatives that live where we live, they shop where we shop, they work where we work, and they basically do business with the people we do business with. So when we're asking them to consider a new policy, we're able to just a quick drive to Madison or even visit with them here in their district and have that discussion that this is important to me as a resident here, just as you're a resident here. If we had this change, imagine how much different it would be. So that makes those decision makers a lot more accessible, where some of the Washington decision makers, I honestly have not seen in my district in, well, a mighty long time. So it, again, brings things closer to home. We don't have that disconnect that the folks in Washington seem to have when we talk about what is good for me and what is good for you versus what is good for the country as a whole.
All right, so here's what I'm thinking. On the three topics, fiscal restraints, limiting the power and jurisdiction, and imposing term limits at the federal level. Just, can you give me one example on each? So for fiscal restraints, like what would be an example of what you're talking about there?
You know, we can talk about a balanced budget, and it's really, really easy to balance a budget if you have unlimited resources. One of the fears with just a balanced budget is, okay, we'll balance the budget, but we're going to raise the tax levels to 60% so we can cover everything in the budget.
Mm-hmm.
That is not the way this group would necessarily attack amendment. They would look at not only fiscal restraint, it would help keep taxes where they are or lessen them, but also help and force Washington to make the decisions necessary to cut spending in the places to make the budget
exactly
balance.
The cuts, yeah,
right.
That's
something
yeah,
we're not
yeah.
seeing. Right, is a lot of those quote unquote general welfare line item spendings. I think that Rand Paul made a comment about some sort of a study with drunk crabs or something like that. And it just made me chuckle. A $750,000 study to find out if crabs lose their inhibition when they're drunk. Like, hey, man, people do. Why do you need to study crabs? But anyway, but that's the kind of spending that an amendment like this could address. Who knows what kind of good that did for the country, but it was still in our federal budget.
Right.
Those are the kind of items that would be addressed by fiscal spending and placing fiscal restraint on the government.
Common sense stuff.
Common sense.
And, spending. You know, President Trump has been talking a lot about common sense. And you know me, I'm a Sarah Palin person. Sarah Palin has talked about common sense, kitchen table budgeting or whatever it is, whatever she's calling it. Okay, so in the interest of time, let's go to limits its power and jurisdiction. Second point, fiscal restraints limits its power and just jurisdiction, again, at the federal level. So what's different or how does that work with the 10th Amendment, giving the states the power?
Well, and enumerated powers, it obviously has been, we'll say, run over by some judicial rulings, and we see challenges to that all the time, like with Colorado, I believe Washington State having the marijuana laws, that is obviously against federal regulations, but the states were able to pass those laws. This is sort of the same concept. I think a bigger illustration and an example that I think everybody understands is when the president signs an executive order, he is basically making law, and that
right.
technically shouldn't be happening because that's what happens That's what the King of England did. He made laws without knowing what's going on in the New World, and that was one of the items that our founders objected to. So, having Congress make laws and pass laws is one of the things that this, you know, eliminating or hampering the ability for one guy to make a law. Is one of the ideas behind the limited power and scope. And then we can talk about, you know, back to the General Commerce Clause, all of the rules and regulations that come down. I had a talk with somebody yesterday at one of these informational meetings, and he was a banker, and the rules for banks alone to issue a small business loan, they completely interrupt the flow of money from the bank to a small business person that could possibly become a bigger business and employ more people.
But
the regulations have kind of tied their hands into making that happen. And in the past, you know, if you lived in a small town and there was a bank and they felt that you had a good business and you had a good idea, bam, they gave you the money. Now there's so many regulations in the way that might not happen. And that, again, hampers our growth as Americans and our ability to become the what Americans
Absolutely.
Should be, and that's a productive member of society. And then
Lisa, stand back. The Trump train is coming through. We always have to give way to the Trump train, and I'm happy to know that you are on the Trump train. Okay.
I'm glad I jumped off the track.
Did you like that sound effect? Thank you. Did you like that? These are very crude sound effects we have on First District Politics. You know, I had to go through some effort to figure out how to download these sound effects, find them, blah, blah, blah. So I impressed myself. And we have a little fun on this show. So the last thing, which, you know, might be the crux of all this, the imposing the term limits. That you impose term limits and you solve so many problems of the career politician. A lot of these problems that we're talking about have to do with the career politician. It was never meant to be a career. You know, the founders, you go in there, do your time, come back, let a new guy come in. And just by doing that, the learning curve involved slows all this down, doesn't it? All this overreach. So when you guys talk about imposing the term limits, do you have a time frame? Is it 4 years, 6 years, 12 years? What do you talk about?
Well, again, I think the common consensus is a two-term limit. And that, again, is something that is discussed. It'll be discussed, proposed. Once proposed, the amendment goes back to all 50 state legislatures. So from having 535 people make a law to having every single state legislator in every single state have input on that particular amendment. So let's say we propose two terms and three quarters of the states come back and say, no, two terms isn't right. We want one term. We go back to the drawing board. The delegates go back to a drawing board. Again, come back with an amendment saying, okay, you didn't want two. Let's do one. And then if 38 of the 50 states approve that one-term limit amendment, that then becomes an amendment to our Constitution and becomes law. So one of the concepts we hear about when we talk about convention of states is the concept of a runaway convention. And if you think about that, you know, we have 16 states right now that are purple, which obviously is a mixture of red and blue. For 38 states to make a runaway convention, we'd have to have all 16 of those states either turn really red or really blue. And I don't think that'll happen anytime soon, just from the reflection of people, you know, on my social media feeds or even talking to people walking down the street. It'll be pretty rough to get one special interest group to sway the vote either way. I think the only special interest group that can sway the vote either way are the American people that want things to change, and that's the whole point behind the Convention of States movement.
Okay. I just want to throw something out there on the term limits. Thinking about Ron Johnson, when Ron Johnson first went in, he said, I'm going to go for one term. He term limited himself. But I think he saw that two is good. So I'm going for two terms. I like two terms now. It took Ron a little bit of time to get his, get his footing in D.C. I think in his second term, he's kind of come into his own and he's done a lot more. I'm not saying I agree with everything, but most of it. So two is good. Two is good. What else? Tell me something else.
Well, the only real objection I've heard to that second term is that, if a guy knows he's in there for only two terms, he can, he doesn't have to be really effective for that second term. And my answer to that argument is if somebody goes into a job knowing they're only going to be there 4 years or 8 years or 12 years, they're going to work as hard as they can. Number one, they're not going to be a career politician that's not going to work as hard as they can, because it's going to be a different kind of person that goes into that job, knowing they have only that short amount of time to accomplish their goals. So I don't think the politician that we're going to get with term limits is going to be the same as the person we get now. And I guess we've seen that with Ron
Good
Johnson.
Point.
He went in and he said, this is my goal. This is what I'm going to do. Towards the end of that first term, he said, wow, I'm really making headway here. I see that the things could possibly change, and I'm going to stay a second, and we'll see where it goes. So I think he's been a good study in how that could work, and he's the type of person, shown he's the type of person, that will stick with it through the end of his term. He's not going to quit three quarters of the way through and say, hey, I'm a lame duck. I don't care what happens. He's the kind of person, the kind of politician that I think we would get if we did put term limits on. We'd get the most effective folks that are there to do the right about a business in the short amount of time that they have.
That's a great point. Great point. Okay. Again, in the interest of time, we're down to about 2.5 minutes left. So let's talk about some of the upcoming meetings that you have coming on. Do you have I know for a fact that you do have a couple more meetings even in my local area. What do you have coming down the pipe? Where can people come to some of your meetings?
Actually, I have one on Thursday night, the 8th, at Route 20 Outhouse, which is just west of I-94 on Highway 20 in Sturtevant. And that, again,
great
is
venue. How did you find out about that venue?
You're hilarious, Bill. Hilarious. I see your hand is in the background, and I can't even see you. And then we're taking a little bit of break for informational meetings. We take a step back, learn what we've learned from those meetings, and then regroup. So my next meeting is going to be in an area where I haven't had one yet. It's on the northeast side of Milwaukee County. On April 9th, we're going to be at a place called The Brick, which is on Green Bay Road in between Good Hope and Silver Spring, hoping to get some of the legislators from the north side of Milwaukee to join us at that meeting. But that's Monday, April 9th. Again, if you can go to the Southeastern Wisconsin Facebook page, which is at facebook.com/COSSEWI, Convention of State Southeast Wisconsin. More meetings will be posted there as they happen. I'm looking for businesses that will let us set up in the corner. I have Sherman Perk is a classic coffee shop that people go to. Bob lets me set up in the corner and collect petition signatures regularly. So any businesses that, want to volunteer some space, we have volunteers that will come out and get those petitions signed. We're looking for folks to help us get the word out. And talking to your friends, family, sending them to the website is a great place to go. So the national site is conventionofstates.com. We have the Facebook state page, and then we have the Southeastern Wisconsin, which is COSSEWI. And again, all the information is posted there regularly.
Excellent information. We do have a couple seconds in buffer time, just so you know. That was a great show, Lisa. Great show. Thank you for coming on the Blog Talk Show. Very much appreciated. If you wanted to just give one last bit of information to the folks listening.
Any help, any conversations you guys want to have, visit our website, hear our talking points, and believe that we can do this if we all work together.
We can, and it's a great cause, and I think it fits together with all the other efforts that are going on, everything that President Trump is doing right now. I think this fits right in with all of it, and people, don't be afraid of the Convention of States. Come out and listen. We have a lot of fun. We actually get out there, go to the Capitol, do some lobbying, talking to the people. Bob, that we met tonight, this one person at one time, just like when you're going out for voters, he's going to be a great connection. So I thank you again, Lisa. Thank you for coming on the show. And watch out. We've got the Trump train coming through one last time. Great show. We'll talk to you soon, Lisa. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill. Bye-bye.
Night.